I'm James. I'm the Director of Science at Autistica. So some of you may have heard our chat with Geraldine Dawson, and you will have heard in that chat, as there has been at INSAR, a lot of discussion around the word biomarker. So I decided to speak to a researcher so that they could explain specifically what a biomarker is, why researchers are looking at them, and what the advantages and disadvantages of discovering a biomarker might be for autistic people.
I'm Sue Fletcher-Watson. I'm a developmental psychologist. I work at the University of Edinburgh.
I think it'd be really good to clarify what exactly a biomarker is.
So a classic example of a biomarker would be a blood test in the case of something like Fragile X syndrome, where the blood sample is analysed for the presence of specific genetic markers that mean that someone has Fragile X syndrome. And importantly, it's biological, comes from a biological form of data, and it's a marker in the sense that everyone with Fragile X syndrome has that marker, and there is nobody who has that marker who does not have Fragile X syndrome. So it is basically the one and only diagnostic marker for that particular condition. So when people are talking about biomarkers here at INSAR, what you often find that they're talking about is data types that are not biological, like eye movement behaviours or scores on a particular kind of cognitive assessment. And in the vast majority of cases, they don't have anything even approaching what you might call a marker status in terms of being very specific to autism.
Great. So why are biomarkers important for autistic people?
Well, I'm sure a lot of autistic people would say that they are not important. I think for researchers and for many people in the kind of broader autism community, the idea of being able to categorically say whether someone is autistic or not seems like it would be beneficial. I think there's a lot of interest in biomarkers to try and make the diagnostic process more efficient and easier for families who often experience quite a sort of lengthy, slow process waiting to get a diagnosis. And often a lot of uncertainty around that. We hear particularly about women and girls, for example, going undiagnosed and perhaps having a stressful time as a result. So it does seem appealing that we might be able to sort of simply and easily and categorically say whether someone was autistic or not. But I also think there are possible disadvantages to that. So one thing is that diagnostic process at the moment means that an individual and their family will come into contact with a lot of kind of experts who will hopefully gather a lot of information and really get to know that person and get to know their family, and that might help them provide a better kind of support service after the diagnosis. I also think that there is some anxiety about biomarkers, particularly prenatal biomarkers identified from children in the womb, being used as a basis for terminating pregnancies in the event that autism was diagnosed, and understandably that's extremely scary prospect for the autistic community.
So thanks. That's a really good summary. There's a lot of concern, like you say, around the development of biomarkers, particularly regarding the motivation of researchers. What do you think about that?
So I think it's really important to remember that even though biomarkers, as I've just described, could be used in a way that's not really supportive and progressive for the autistic community, I don't think that's what researchers who are looking for biomarkers are really aiming to do in the vast majority of cases. I think people are interested in understanding variety within the autistic spectrum. People are interested in helping families, and people are also interested in pursuing scientific goals that are fascinating and important for our scientific community. So long as that work happens and is informed by the autistic community, I think we don't need to be afraid of it. We should embrace it and try and make it as productive and positive for people on the autism spectrum and for their families as we can.
So you've been one of the leading voices in terms of involving autistic people in autism research. How do you think INSAR is getting on?
I think INSAR has made really big strides. And of course, there is still further to go. But this year, people are doing flapplause instead of clapping, which is great. Though I forgot this morning and I clapped by mistake. There are more and more autistic people here. There are more and more autistic researchers at INSAR and just generally leading on autism research. So it's moving in the right direction. I think there's still a good way to go, but I also think it's important to remember that INSAR is a conference that's about high quality research. And I'm not in the least saying that autistic people are not delivering high quality research or cannot appreciate it, but I do think it's legitimate for the organisers to still emphasise that the full richness and complexity of the methods being presented should be a part of presentations, and that while autistic people should be encouraged and welcomed into this space, of course, we also shouldn't feel responsible as researchers to ensure that everything we say is sort of fully comprehensible to a sort of general audience. And I feel like that's okay.
Great. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you.
This is John Adams at INSAR 2018, and I'm sitting next to Stephen Shaw, and I'm going to ask him just a couple of questions about why he's here at INSAR. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. Hi, John.
Why are you here at INSAR?
To share research with other autistic people and those who are interested in using strength-based approaches to support those of us on the autism spectrum.
What do you mean by a strength-based support?
So what I mean is that we need to turn away from thinking of autism as a collection of deficits, disorders, and disability, and move towards thinking of autism as just a collection of characteristics. And then the question is, how can we use those characteristics in order to help autistic people lead fulfilling and productive lives?
That sounds absolutely fantastic. I'm an autistic person, I do a lot of sound work and music work and artwork, and I find that the skills that being autistic give me, the strengths, I use in my work. You know, there are things that I need support with, but that's mainly when it's imposed on me by other people, you know, demands that are not my strength. Is it relatively the same for you, Guy?
Yeah, it is. And with autistic people, one of the characteristics that are not often mentioned are the widely varying skill set. And what that translates to is that the things we're good at, we're incredibly good at. The things we're not good at, we really need a lot of support.
Yes.
And as we think about it, as we generalize to the typical population, I have not met anybody, whether typical or autistic, who has made a living, has made a career on remediated weaknesses. We all use our strengths, and so should autistics.
No, I quite agree. Would you like to see more autistic people at INSAR?
Oh, I would like to see more autistic people here. Part of the reason that I come is that I know that there will be a community of autistics here where we can gather and share common experiences and things we've learned in our research.
We've just come back down from the suicidality and autism one, and you know, as an autistic person who's experienced a lot of issues that way, the one important thing for me is that I feel I belong. You know, the autistic community out there, you know, helps me feel I belong. But sometimes when I mix with a lot of non-autistic people, I just get that feeling I don't. But I haven't really had that too much here, other than when someone talked about curing autism. Is that kind of similar for you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's always dubious to think about curing autism. Autism is an expression of the diversity of the human gene pool. And what we need to do is take a look at what is and then work with what is. Now, that said, some of us on the spectrum have some really significant needs. And those needs do need to be addressed. They need to be remediated for. We cannot deny those or ignore them. But we also have to be aware of the significant strengths that we can bring to society.
Sure. Sometimes I get told, oh, you don't look autistic, or, John, you're speaking, you can't be autistic. You know, I really don't like that sort of thing. It's other people's assumptions, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm not sure what... Actually, I do kind of know what autism looks like, but it's more of a case of it being it takes one to know one.
Yes.
But other than that, the typical population, we look just like anybody else.
Yeah. Absolutely fabulous. Thank you very much, Steve.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
We've come to the end of day one. I sat down with John and Koss to see how they found their first day and experience of the INSAR meeting.
It's been a good day. It's been a challenging day. Some really positive, interesting things that we've heard in individual conversations with people, and some challenging language and ideals thrown from others.
It's been quite an interesting contrast. You sit and listen to people talking, and you think they don't understand us at all. They other us constantly. But you get outside the meeting and you ask individuals, will you speak to us? Will you give us an interview? And everyone's really friendly and helpful and says yes. Nobody said no. It's a little difficult to actually understand why there is that difference between talking about autistic people in the wide, in the general, and talking to an autistic person as an individual. It sometimes makes you wonder whether they don't see the autistic individuals when they see the autism in their research.
You know, one of the things I tweeted earlier was that if researchers met and socialised, probably not the right term, but, you know, worked alongside or just were friends with an autistic person. You know, most of them really only see autistic people as patients or subjects. And with the ethical constraints on what they're allowed to ask and say, they just can't say, what did you have for breakfast? How do you feel about this colour? And, you know, that really is important for researchers to meet autistic people.
That way, also, they can relate what they're doing to the people that they are supposed to be doing it for. It's a really, really good argument for, particularly for early career researchers, but for all autism researchers, to have autistic mentors, to have somebody to test what they're doing against, somebody to inform about the effects that they might be having or the constraints that they might be labouring under, and sometimes the misapprehensions that, with the best will in the world, quite a few seem to have about what autism is and what autistic people are like.
I think it's the point you made about the difference between how someone presents and then how someone talks on a one-to-one basis is really interesting to me. It reminds me when I started presenting my PhD results, and I would stand up and I would say, we have 20 individuals with autism, and I would talk about it in a very objective way, and I'm trying to sort of think about why I did that and why I felt the need to do that. And I think there's something, it's a bit of an anxiety around as a scientist looking like you're objective and that you're fitting in with almost a cultural expectation and a set of norms around how you should present and how you should look as a scientist. And almost, I think, I possibly worked harder than most people to almost talk about autism the way that you've described. And I think it's hard not to do that, because I think you lose sight, because you think, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is what the culture is, right?
But I think that stems from a generational problem, insofar as early career researchers or students are trying to emulate or take on what they're being taught, which is part of the job. But autism is a relatively new research area, and the people teaching young researchers, particularly 10, 15 years ago, were very old school, and they had very set views. And so I think it takes an amount of experience and confidence for a young autism researcher to actually both take in what their older generation teachers are saying, and then have the confidence and the experience to then discard what they choose to discard and create their own ideas. And that's how generational change happens, I think. So it's to be expected, but sooner rather than later, the change.
One of the people we interviewed earlier on today, and we were talking to them afterwards, just, you know, casually, We were discussing language, you know, with autism or autistic person. And, you know, they were saying they've actually been told and taught, you know, to say with autism. You know, an autistic person is disrespectful, but they've been taught from the disability standpoint where it would be unacceptable, you know, the person first one. And, you know, to hear autistic people saying, well, actually, we find that disrespectful, must be very hard for them because that's the way they've been taught to talk. Sorry, showing empathy there. And, you know, it's a lot of what you would, you know, people have been taught about autism are what we autistic people refer to now as the myths and stereotypes. Mm. I mean, we're sitting here looking at the bigger picture and the detail. You know, if anything is breaking the rules, we are.
And I think that was something else which really came through from your comments earlier, was that when you spoke to people one-to-one, their intentions became slightly clearer. And I just wonder as well, with these scientific presentations, it's almost like it's not cool to actually say that what you're trying to do is improve people's improves people's outcomes. You have to look like you're answering an empirical question.
But which is the real them? What is the thing that they really think? Is it the thing that they're saying to each other behind closed doors, or is it the thing that they're saying to us as autistic people? It's very hard to know what they actually think when they do that. My personal opinion, based on today, is that they have never given it enough thought, because they've never actually had autistic people in charge of the conversation. It's us that are holding the microphone, it's us that are asking the questions.
I think we've been challenging just by being here. And, you know, the revelation that, yes, we speak, we do look them in the eyes, we do give relatively informed questions and reasonably informed answers. You know, that must be a bit of a shock for some of them.
And we question some of the things that they say. Mm. Some of the podcasts to come are going to reflect that in...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're going to be quite interesting, don't you?
And they, well, yeah, of course. And, you know, there are people out there with a real heart for autistic people doing research, like the research into mental health and suicidality. You know, that is right up there screaming in big letters that it needs to be addressed.
They've come up with some really good subjects amongst all molecular biology and all the words that have too many syllables to fit on Twitter. There's stuff on participation here. Mm. There's stuff on autism and girls and women. There are things that we're interested in and have been talking about. Aging is part of the agenda. I think we're going to hear about the sleep project that's hopefully getting underway, but from a point of view of participation.
Yes.
You know, I think there's some wonderful stuff. Oddly enough, most of the things that I've just mentioned are coming out of the UK, and that's a little worrying. And then you get to speak to somebody like Hilde Gertz, who is doing wonderful stuff on ageing and cognition here in the Netherlands, and you think, it's getting there, it's getting there, and it will go further. But at the moment, you know, I think that there is a centre of excellence in the UK, and I think most of those subjects, to my mind, have been based on researchers listening to autistic people and responding.
I don't feel as much as an alien here as I thought I would have done. You know, I don't actually feel out of place. I feel I should be here. And, you know, whether that's the way we're being superbly looked after by Autistica, or, you know, seeing, you know, those British colleagues that we, you know, we've worked with and, you know...
To have familiar faces.
Oh, no, it really is. And, you know, research that we know that we have a stake in. You know, a lot of the research here that's being presented, we don't know how much of a stake autistic people have had in it. And, you know, that's kind of intriguing. And if it comforts us... as autistic people, it may comfort other autistic people to know that there are researchers who have, you know, our best interests, you know, as part of that research, you know, that we have a stake in it. I feel that's good.
So are you looking forward to tomorrow then?
Yeah, I'm tired. I'm pretty exhausted. Yes. But yes, I am actually.
Yes.
Yes.
We're going to be really, really busy tomorrow. There's a lot to get through, but it is a fascinating process. I wouldn't like to be here for a week. I don't think I might survive a week. I'm going to be really, really pleased when I get home to be home, and I'll need a week off, but very glad to be here. Yeah, and really looking forward to tomorrow.